An Osho Talk. The great Zen master, Tahui. Reflections on the transformation of an intellectual to enlightenment. Number 2.
Tend the ox. Since you're studying this path, then at all times, in your encounters with people and responses to circumstances, you must not let wrong thoughts continue. If you cannot see through them, then the moment a wrong thought comes up, you should quickly concentrate your mental energy to pull yourself away. If you always follow those thoughts and let them continue without a break, not only does this obstruct the path, but it makes you out to be a man without wisdom. In the old days, Kuei Shan asked Lazy An, "What work do you do during the 24 hours of the day?" An said, "I tend an ox." Kuei Shan said, "How do you tend it?" An said, "Whenever it gets into the grass, I pull it back by the nose." Kuei Shan said, "You're really tending the ox." People who study the path in controlling wrong thoughts should be like Lazy An tending his ox. Then gradually, a wholesome ripening will take place of itself. Do not grasp another's bow. Do not grasp another's bow. Do not ride another's horse. Do not meddle in another's affairs. Though this is a commonplace saying, it can also be sustenance for entering the path. Just examine yourself constantly. From morning to night, what do you do to help others and help yourself? If you notice even the slightest partiality or insensitivity, you must admonish yourself. Don't be careless about this. In the old days, Chan Master Tao Lin lived up in a tall pine tree on Chin Wan Mountain. People of the time called him the Bird's Nest Monk. When Minister Po Chui was commander of Chin Tung, he made a special trip to the mountain to visit him. Po said, "It's very dangerous where you're sitting, Chan Master." The master said, "My danger may be very great, Minister, but yours is even greater." Po said, "I am commander of Chen Tung. What danger is there?" The master said, "Fuel and fire are joined. Consciousness and identity do not stay. How can you not be in danger?" Po also asked, What is the overall meaning of the Buddhist teaching? The master said, don't commit any evils. Practice the many virtues. Po said, even a 3-year-old child could say this. The master said, though a 3-year-old child can say it, an 80-year-old man cannot carry it out. Po then bowed and departed.
Bending the ox. Is a very ancient symbol in the history of Zen. There exist 10 paintings in China, the 10th painting has been a cause of great controversy. I would like you to understand those 10 paintings and the controversy before we start Ta Hui's sermon on tending the hearts, tending the ox. The 10 paintings are immensely beautiful. In the first, the ox is last. The man to whom the ox belongs is just standing, looking all around in the thick forest, and he cannot see where the ox has gone. He is simply bewildered, confused. It is getting late. Sun is setting. Soon it will be night. And then to go into the thick forest to find the ox will become more and more difficult. In the second picture, he finds footprints of the ox. He feels a little happier that perhaps there is a possibility to find the ox. He has found the footprints. He follows the footprints. In the third picture, he sees the back of the ox standing in the thick forest, almost difficult to see, but he can figure it out that it is his ox and it is his back. In the fourth, he has reached the arcs. He can see the arcs now in its complete body. He is rejoiced. In the fifth painting, he takes hold of the ox horns . It is a great struggle to bring it back home, but he wins over. In the sixth picture, he is riding on the ox, coming back towards his home. These are beautiful paintings. In the seventh picture, the ox is tied down in his place. In the eighth picture, the man is so full of joy that he starts playing on his flute. The ninth picture is an empty frame. There is nothing painted in it. In the tenth picture, which is the cause of a great controversy, the man is going with a bottle of wine towards the marketplace, almost drunk. You can see he cannot even walk. This tenth picture has been a great controversy, raging for 2,000 years. One sect, which is the major sect of Mahayana, believes that ninth is the last picture. It represents the no mind. You have achieved the goal. The ox is your innermost self, which you have lost. And the whole series of pictures is in search of your inner self. You have found the self in the ninth. There is immense silence and peace. It is nirvana. It is no mind. Beyond the ninth, the people who say this is the end of the journey think that somebody has added the tenth picture, which seems to be absolutely irrelevant. But the party who belong to a small sect of Zen believes in the tenth picture too. It says when one has become enlightened, this is not the end. This is the highest peak of consciousness. It is the greatest achievement. But one has to come back to the human world, to the ordinary world. One has to become again part of the greater humanity. Only then he can share. Only then he can provoke others for the search. And certainly when he comes from such height, he is absolutely drunk with ecstasy. That bottle of the wine is not an ordinary wine. It is just symbolic of an ecstatic state. When these pictures were brought to Japan, just 1,200-1,300 years before, only 9 pictures were brought. The 10th was troublesome. It was left in China. I was puzzled when I first looked at the Japanese pictures. It seems to be complete. Once you have achieved nirvana, what is more is there. And then I found in an old Chinese book 10 pictures. And I was immensely happy that somebody has the insight 2,000 years before. That a Buddha is not a Buddha if he cannot come back to the ordinary humanity. If he cannot become again just simple, innocent, carrying his nirvana, carrying his ecstasy in the bottle of the wine, utterly drunk with the divine, but still going towards the marketplace. I could see whoever painted the 10th picture was the right person. Up to the 9th, it is simply logical. Beyond the 9th, the 10th is of great realization. According to me, up to the 9th, a man is only a Buddha. With the 10th, he also becomes a Zorba. And because this has been my constant theme, I have been insisting that the 10th picture is authentic. And if it was not there, I was going to paint it. Without it, ending in nothingness, looks a little sad, looks a little serious, looks empty. All this effort of finding yourself, meditating, going beyond the mind, realizing your being, and ending up in a desert of nothingness. No, something must be there more to it, something more beyond it. where flowers blossom, where songs arise, where dance is again possible, of course on a totally different level. But these pictures of tending the ox have been found to be tremendously significant in explaining the whole path, step by step. Taohui says, since you are studying this path, remember what I have said about Taohui. He is a teacher. Otherwise, no master can use the word studying. The master will say, since you are following this path, since you are on this path, studying, that is not the way of the seeker, that is the way of the curious student who wants to know something, more information, more knowledge, who is not interested in actually transforming himself. But Taohui is a teacher. Although he tries in every possible way to pose like a master, but he cannot deceive anyone who is enlightened. Here and there loopholes will be there which he cannot even think that they will cause his masterhood to be just a hypocrisy. It would have been absolutely correct if he has said that I am only a teacher. But he is not saying that. When there is a possibility to be accepted as a master, even the emperor accepts him as a great master of Chan, then he keeps quiet. Although he must have known, because he seems to be a very intelligent man, he must have been aware that he is not a master. He is a very good teacher, and I will like you to remember on every point where he shows his unawareness. Since you are studying this path, studying belongs to students. A seeker does not study the path. A seeker gets involved. He participates in the whole pilgrimage. He is a pilgrim. He is not a student. He has no desire to know about the path. He wants to reach the goal. Path or no path, he wants to come back home. Then at all times, in your encounters with people and responses to circumstances, you must not let wrong thoughts continue. Again, a loophole. The question is not of wrong thoughts and right thoughts. All thoughts are wrong. As far as going beyond the mind is concerned. And he is not even aware of the fact that the right and wrong are never separate. They are always together. Can you separate love from hate? Millions have tried, but not a single person has been able to succeed. Because you are trying against the very nature of things. Can you separate darkness from light? Although they look so different, but the scientific inquiry into the light and into darkness has proved something else against the common sense. The difference between darkness and light is only of degrees. Darkness simply means less light. And light simply means less darkness. That's why there are animals like owls and others for whom in the night it is day. Because they have better eyes than you have. So even in lesser light, which looks to you as darkness, for them it is full light. Their eyes are more capable than your eyes. And in the day, they cannot open their eyes because their eyes are so sensitive that the daylight is dazzling. In the daylight, their eyes simply close. Naturally, they see darkness. When for you all it is light, for the owls it is night. And for you all when it is night, for the owls it is day. Full light. So the difference between light and darkness is only of degrees. You cannot have light without darkness, and you cannot have God without evil, without devil. It is strange that the religions who believe in God automatically believe in the devil too. They have to. It is just a logical necessity. And the religions who don't believe in God don't believe in devil either. For example, Jainism has no God, therefore there is no devil. Simply it is out of question. But all the religions that believe in God have to accept his polar opposite, the devil. Why this necessity? Because existence always needs a polarity. birth is polarized by death, love is polarized by hate, compassion is polarized by cruelty. Look around life, everything has its polar opposite. And if you can take away the polar opposite, then the other also will disappear. They can exist only together. What is a good thought? And what is a bad thought? And how can you separate them? Only a teacher who does not know that the final approach towards your being needs all thoughts to disappear. It does not matter whether they are good or bad. We are not talking here of morality. We are talking here of authentic religion. Of course, in morality there are good thoughts and bad thoughts, and they are all arbitrary. Because for Mohammedans to have four wives is not a bad thought. And it is a bad thought to everybody else in the world. The very idea of having four wives. To the ancient Hindus, even a woman having five husbands was not a bad thought. The woman who was having five husbands is worshipped as one of the five great women of India. And of course, five husbands is not the right number, because the weekend remains. What to do with the weekend? Every day the poor woman has to change the husband for 5 days, and 2 days were just holiday. So weekend is not something new and American. It is very ancient and Indian. And nobody has condemned it, that it was an ugly situation. No Hindu thinker or philosopher or theologian has condemned it. It was acceptable. One of the five brothers, the eldest, Yudhishthir, who had one wife, he is thought by Hindus as one of the most religious men that has ever lived on the earth. He is called the king of religiousness, Dharmaraj. And this fellow, Yudhishthir, was a compulsive gambler. And gambler to the extent that he staked his whole kingdom, his whole treasury, and finally he staked his wife. All five brothers were present. They consented. And nobody has condemned it. And they still go on calling Yudhishthir as one of the greatest religious men. And he is behaving with women worse than animals. As if woman is just a dead property. Like furniture. You can gamble. So what is right? For the Mohammedans, the Quran is their holy source. And the Quran says God created all other animals for men to eat. Now, if God says it, there is no harm in eating animals except men. All animals can be butchered and eaten without any problem. No question of non-violence ever arises. And there are jannas their monks keep a mask on their nose, because when you exhale, the air becomes hot, and in the atmosphere there are very tiny, invisible living cells. That hot air can kill them. To protect those people who you cannot see, they are keeping continuously their nose covered with a cloth. So that by the time their hot air reaches out of the cloth, it is no more hot. The cloth is preventing it and cooling it. Now, who is right? There are Hindu monks who save their hairs, their mustache, their beard, every hair has to be removed. And the reason is that they consider that hairs are dead parts of the body. In a way, they are right. Dead cells in your body are being thrown out continuously in different ways. That's why when you cut hair, you don't feel hurt. If they were living, you would have felt the pain. So hairs are just as dead as any corpse. Why carry dead things? Hindus and their monks remove them. If you look at different people, different traditions, you will be simply surprised at how to manage what is right and what is wrong. In China, even eating snakes is not thought to be anything strange. It is in fact one of the most delicious food. Just they have to cut the snake's head because its poison is only in the mouth. Just a small gland in its mouth has the poison. They chop the head and the remaining is just vegetable. And if you are a guest in a Chinese house, they will certainly serve you just as a welcome. And those who have eaten it, they say, it is delicious. There is not a single animal, bird, insect, which is not being eaten somewhere, which will create nausea in you. Then what kind of people are these? But traditionally, they have accepted it as right. And once something is accepted as right, it becomes right to that tradition, to those people. They simply laugh at you that you are missing such beautiful food. In the ancient Indian temples and even now in the South India, the temples are nothing but whore houses, because it was a custom that everybody should donate his eldest daughter to the god. But God is just a stone statue. The priest exploits the poor woman sexually in the name of God. And when so many women start gathering in a temple, then rich people start coming to the temple. These women are called devadasis, servants of God. But their actual function is to attract the rich people to the temple. They function as religious prostitutes. And because of them, the temple goes on becoming richer and richer. You will be surprised to know that just few days before in Bombay, a survey was made of the prostitutes. 30% were found devadasis from the temples of South India. Because if the priest finds someone beautiful enough, then it is better to sell it in the Bombay market rather than to keep her in the temple. That way they can get lump sum money. 30% of the prostitutes were offered to God have reached to the market of the prostitutes in Bombay. And no Hindu has objected to it. Not even today. The government takes no notice. It continues. Because nobody wants to irritate anybody. Nobody wants to annoy anybody. Everybody is trying to look good in people's eyes. Millions of women have died here in this country alive. They had to die with their husbands. They had to jump with the dead husband in the funeral pyre. That was called the tradition of satis. Those women who managed this society and very painful society. Were called great women, very religious women. But the real idea behind it was not religious, nothing good in it. The real idea behind it was that the man does not want his wife, when he is dead, who knows, she may fall in love with somebody else. He wants to keep her possessed by him even after death. So the only way is that she should also die with him. Leaving her, he cannot trust. Just to satisfy his masochistic male chauvinistic stupid idea of being the owner, and they respected these women. They made memorials for them. And I have been asking Shankaracharyas and Hindu learned and wise monks that if this is the case, why not a single man in the whole history has jumped with his wife when she has died? And they have nothing to answer. They simply look embarrassed. They want to change the subject. But with me it is very difficult to change the subject. I said, if it is something great, then man has proved himself lower than women. But the truth is, man always has thought he is the master and the woman is the possession. Why he should die for the possession? He can manage as many women as he wants. In fact, in the ancient India, women were sold in the marketplaces as they were sold in all over the world as slaves. And you will be surprised. The great Hindu saints, sages, because nobody looks behind the curtain, even they were going into the places where women were oxen, and they were purchasing women. They had wives, and alongside they had purchased women, and for these purchased women a special word was used. For the wife, the word is patni. And for the purchased woman, the word is vadhu. Now the distinction is lost, because now there is no auction place for women. But it was perfectly right. Even the so-called seers, saints, whom you think that they have gone beyond all worldly things, were not even so sensitive that they should have revolted against this brutal process of auctioning women. And purchasing them just like any other thing you purchase in the market. What is right and what is wrong? So the question is not, you must not let wrong thoughts continue. You must not let thoughts continue. No question of right, no question of wrong. In other words, every thought is wrong. All thoughts have to be removed from your mind. So the screen of the mind is completely empty. So you have a vast sky open and nothing moves in the mind. That is authentic Zen. But that can be said only by an enlightened master. Ta Hui has collected from here and there whatever he felt seems to be significant. But he had no inner criterion to judge what is authentic path of self-realization. And he was going to all kinds of teachers, and he was collecting all kinds of contradictory thoughts. He was an intelligent man, but only intelligence is not capable to conceive the nature of your being. It falls off. If you cannot see through them, then the moment a wrong thought comes up, you should quickly concentrate your mental energy to pull yourself away. First, every thought is wrong. Second, you don't have to pull your mental energy away. Because mental energy is the root of all your thoughts. It is the mother of your all thought processes, good or bad. The mental energy has not to be pulled away. You have to get out of the mental energy, out of the mass of the mental energy. You have to pull yourself out. You have to stand out of your mind as a watcher. And whatever is going on in the mind, you don't even interfere. You simply watch. You simply go on seeing as if it is somebody else's mind and you have nothing to do with it. It is none of your business. In this indifferent aloofness, all thoughts disappear. And with thoughts disappearing, there is no mind. Because mind is nothing but a collective name of thoughts. He does not know anything about meditation. He has never meditated. If you always follow those thoughts and let them continue without a break, not only does this obstruct the path, but it makes you out to be a man without wisdom. He knows nothing about wisdom. He is using a wrong word. Whatever he is saying, only one thing can be said, that if you allow thoughts to continue without break, this will not only obstruct the path, but it makes you out to be a man without knowledge, not without wisdom. That also has to be clearly seen. Knowledge is absolutely relevant in science. The very meaning of the word science is knowledge. And the whole effort of science is to go on changing the unknown into the known. And the ultimate goal of science is that one day there will be left nothing unknown. Everything will be known. All would be reduced to knowledge. And this is the point where religion differs. And the difference is of tremendous value. Religion says that there is not only two categories in the world of known and unknown. There is a third category which is more significant than the other two. And that is the category of the unknowable, the mysterious, the miraculous. You can live it. You can be it. You can rejoice it. You can sing it. You can dance it. But you cannot know it. Knowledge is not possible. And to enter into this realm of the unknowable is wisdom. Wisdom is not knowledge. Wisdom is innocence and a deep feeling of the miraculous. A wise man's eyes are full of wonder. Just a small flower makes him wonder. It is so mysterious why it is there. It happened one night, Socrates did not return to his home. The wife was very much disturbed. The whole neighborhood was disturbed. They looked all around where he has gone. He was not a man to go anywhere. From his school where he used to teach, he used to come directly to home. And it had never happened before. It was unprecedented. And snow was falling. And they were very much concerned whether he has got lost somewhere in the forest. By the morning they found him. He was standing by the side of a tree. Supporting his back with the tree. And looking at the sky. When they reached, he was almost frozen. Because up to his knees there was snow. They shook him, that what are you doing here? He said, what I am doing here? The night was so wonderful, and the stars were so mysterious, that I just went on seeing, and seeing, and seeing. Many times the idea came that it is getting late. But I was almost hypnotized by the stars and their beauty. I knew that snow is falling. I was shivering. But I could not move. Now this man is a man of wisdom. There are millions of people in the world who go on running here and there, never looking at the sky. It is just on top of them. No fee, no ticket, no standing in a queue before a movie house, and such a splendor. And you own it. Because nobody else owns it. A full moon night, and nothing stirs in your heart. A rose bud opens, and nothing opens in your being. A cuckoo starts singing its song, and you don't get cuckoo. Wisdom is a totally different thing than knowledge. Knowledge demystifies existence, wisdom mystifies it. Wisdom belongs to the mystics, knowledge belongs to scientists, to philosophers, to theologians. But they are not the people of religion. They don't know the heartbeat of the universe. Only the people who enter into the mysterious realm open the doors upon doors of mystery and suddenly find themselves not in a mundane world which is meaningless, but in a fairy land where everything is so significant, so poetic, so musical, so beautiful. This whole experience is the experience of a religious being. And this experience is possible only if you can put your mind aside. Mind is a collector of knowledge. It has no interest in mystery. In the old days, Kuishan asked Lazy Ann, "What work do you do during the 24 hours of the day?" And said, "I tend an ox." Kuishan said, "How do you tend it?" And said, "Whenever it gets into the grass, I pull it back by the nose." Kuishan said, "You are really tending the ox." Zen is full of such a small dialogues, which are very special to Zen. In this small statement, just few words are transferred between two men, but everything that has to be said about Zen has been said. Anne was known in the history of Zen as a lazy man. His name became Lazy Ann. Because he never did anything. Kuishan asked him, What work do you do during 24 hours of the day? Because you don't do anything, just sitting silently. And people loved Lazy N. He was a beautiful man. Of a great presence. His very being in a place made it almost holy. He had such an energy. Although he was never doing anything, people used to bring food to him. He was never going even to beg, which is the way of all Buddhist monks. But people took care of him. They were concerned about him. If it was cold, they will bring blankets. If it was raining, they will make some arrangement. And Anne was so lazy, he will not even walk. People will have to carry him. And people knew that it is no point saying anything to him. Just do whatsoever you do. And he never prevented anybody. That where you are taking me. Even that much was too much. To ask where you are taking me. He is a special character. Kuisan was also a man of great understanding. So he asked, what you go on doing 24 hours? And said, I tend an ox. He refers to those 10 pictures of tending the ox. Just a small statement, and he didn't say anything more. Kuisan said, how do you tend it? And said, whenever it gets into the grass, I pull it back by the nose. Kuisan said, you are really tending the ox. And that's the end of the dialogue. But Kuisan has given his agreement that this is the way of meditation. When your consciousness starts getting into the mind, pull it back. Remain aloof. Stand aside. Keep a distance between yourself and the mind. And there is no need to do anything else. Kuisan really was satisfied that Lazy N is not lazy at all. He is doing a great inner work. Outside, of course, he looks like lazy. But one can see from his aura, his energy field, a certain sweetness surrounding him, a certain fragrance. And he does not do anything. Still, wherever he is, people take care of him on their own accord. They suddenly feel that it is their responsibility to take care of lazy N, as if he is just a small child, so innocent that anybody will immediately start taking care of him. And he was an old man. Nobody ever said to him that do something. He was doing what can be called the real doing. He was constantly doing only one thing, not allowing his consciousness to be involved in the grassland of the mind, where thoughts grow like grass, wild grass. He just goes on pulling his ox back. And it does not take much time. Once your consciousness becomes accustomed of not being involved in the mind, you don't have to pull it again and again. Because to be out of the mind is so peaceful and so joyful and so blissful that consciousness itself becomes aware that to be in the mind is to be in the hell. Now it is up to you. If you want to be in the hell, you can be. Otherwise, it is not compulsory. It is optional. Hell is optional. People who study the path, again he goes on using the word study, in controlling wrong thoughts, again he goes on saying wrong things, should be like lazy N tending his ox. He has not understood what lazy N is doing. He is not controlling his thoughts. He is simply pulling out his consciousness out of the world of the thoughts, out of the area and the territory of the mind. Then gradually a wholesome ripening will take place of itself. Do not grasp another's bow. Do not grasp another's bow. Do not ride another's horse. Do not meddle in another's affairs. Though this is a commonplace saying, it can also be sustenance for entering the path. It is an ancient saying in China. Do not grasp another's bow. Do not ride another's horse. Do not meddle in another's affairs. It is tremendously beautiful. Although it is just the wisdom of the people, they are saying, do not borrow anything from anybody. Depend on your own sources. Because unless you depend on your own sources, you can never be free. And you can never be an individual. You will always remain a slave. Tahui says, though this is a commonplace saying, it can also be sustenance for entering the path. Once in a while, he says something which he must have gathered from someone who knows it. Just examine yourself constantly, but immediately he falls back into his own state. This is the trouble. If you are repeating somebody else's knowledge, you cannot go on long. Soon you will say something which will expose you. He says, just examine yourself constantly. That is not the way of Zen. That is the way of psychoanalysis, which was not existent in those days, and which is not existent in the East even today. And if West is not adamant, is not prejudiced, and is open to understand, even psychoanalysis will disappear from the West. Examining yourself makes no change in you. You can go on examining yourself constantly. Examining is another word for analyzing. Why this thought? Why that thought? What is the cause of it? Why it came to me? What should I do with it? You will get into a madhouse. No, that is not the way of the East. The East says, remain aware of yourself constantly. And being aware is not examining yourself. Being aware is simply being aloof but alert. Whatever the mind is doing, let it do. Whatever is going on in the mind, let it do. You simply be out of it. You should not be a participant. That's all that is needed. And mind dies its own death. By your examining, you are entering into the territory of the mind. And mind is such a subtle phenomenon, the moment you enter into it, it starts exploiting your energy for its own purposes. This is the experience of the whole Eastern mystics. Do not analyze, do not examine, do not justify, do not condemn. Don't do any evaluation, simply stand out as if the road is full of traffic. You step by the side of the road and stand there without bothering who is going, who is coming, who is good, who is bad. And this discovery of awareness has been such a miracle that the traffic simply disappears just by your stepping out of it. You don't have to examine, you don't have to control, You don't have to dispel anything. You don't have to do anything at all. Just pure awareness is enough to kill the mind. From morning to night, what do you do to help others and help yourself? If you notice even the slightest partiality or insensitivity, you must admonish yourself. Don't be careless about this. He is simply talking like a moralist teacher, a Catholic priest. He has forgotten that once a man is aware of himself, he does whatever is right, and he never does whatever is wrong. It is not a question of choice. His awareness is enough to take him towards the right and never towards the wrong. He simply remains choicelessly alert and aware. And his whole life style changes. Then whatever he does, it is always beneficial. Then he is a constant blessing to the whole world. But it is not a decision on his part. It is simply his spontaneity. It is simply his nature. Just to be good. Just as on a rose bush, the roses blossom. On the bush of awareness, the roses blossom. The roses of goodness, the roses of beauty, the roses of grace, the roses of all kinds of blessings for others, for himself. In the old days, Chan Master Tao Lin lived up in a tall pine tree on Chin Wang Mountain. People of the time called him the bird's nest monk. When Minister Po Chui was commander of Chien Tang, he made a special trip to the mountain to visit him. Po said, "It is very dangerous where you are sitting." Chan Master. The master said, "My danger may be very great, Minister, but yours is even greater." Po said, "I am commander of Chien Tang. What danger is there?" The master said, "Fuel and fire are joined. Consciousness and identity do not stay. How can you not be in danger?" What he is saying is tremendously significant. He is saying, "I am sitting on a pine tree in a bird's nest, it is obvious that there is danger of falling. But are you aware that if you fall from your position, you will be in a far more danger? And your fall is possible any moment. You are commander-in-chief. The enemy is not far away. You and your enemy is just like fuel and fire joined. Just close by is fire, and very near to it is fuel. They can join any moment. Any moment there can be an explosion. You are sitting on a volcano. I am certainly in a danger if I fall. Perhaps I may break few of my bones. But it is not much of a danger. Your danger is far great. Consciousness and identity do not stay. Your consciousness is so small. That is the greatest danger in the world. Because any moment you can slip into unconsciousness. And then in unconsciousness, whatever you do is going to harm you. My consciousness is absolute. I can sit on this tall pine tree in a bird's nest. I know I will not fall because I am alert. Even when I am asleep, I am alert. Once Ananda had asked Gautam Buddha, because he used to sleep in the same room, just to take care if anything he needs in the night. If he suddenly feels sick, he was fragile, he was old, and he was working so hard, walking continuously till his very last breath. But Ananda was surprised that once he takes a posture which is called the lion's posture, just the way the lion sleeps. Gautam Buddha used to sleep in the same posture. He remains in the same posture the whole night. He does not move his feet. He does not move his hand. He does not move anything. He remains almost like a statue. Ananda was surprised. One day, perhaps one can manage, but day after day, month after month, year after year, finally he could not contain his curiosity. He said, I have to ask it. Do you sleep or not? Because you never change your posture. Buddha said, the body sleeps, the mind sleeps, but my awareness is eternal. It knows nothing of its need. And secondly, you toss and turn because you are trying to find the right posture. I have found it. Why should I toss and turn? What you are doing, tossing and turning this way and that way, in fact you are trying to find the right pose. I have found it, Ananda. Now there is no need to change it. And as far as awareness is concerned, even in the night there is a small flame of awareness. Eternally burning within me. Even in sleep, so the old master was right when he said, my danger may be very great. Minister, but yours is even greater. Your consciousness is so small. And your identity is so false. You think yourself commander-in-chief, but behind your uniform, you are just a mortal, just a bullet will finish you, or just an order from the emperor that you are retired, are demoted, and you lose your identity. Nobody can take my identity back from me. Nobody can tell me to retire. I am retired already. Nobody can tell me that you are demoted. Where else you can throw me? I am already in such a situation that nobody would like to change places with me. Rarely people come here. You are a strange fellow that you took so much trouble to come to this mountain, to this lonely spot, and to talk to a strange man who lives just on the pine tree, who never gets down. My identity is within my own hands. Your identity is given to you. It can be taken away. Your danger, minister, is far greater. Po also asked, what is the overall meaning of the Buddhist teaching? The master said, don't commit any evils, practice the many virtues. That is absolutely wrong. And I don't think that it has been said by the Chan Master Tao Lin. He cannot say this. This must be Ta Hui's edition, because this is not the teaching of Buddha, and he is asking the overall teaching of the Buddhist philosophy. Just in gist, Buddha's philosophy is simply vipassana. In one word, meditation. Everything else is secondary and non-essential. What he is saying is all non-essential. Don't commit any evils. practice the many virtues. That is not Buddha's teaching. That is where Buddha is unique from any other masters of the world, whose teaching can be reduced to a single word. Be silent, go beyond mind, then whatever you do is good. Ho said even a 3-year-old child could say this. The master said, though a 3-year-old child can say it, an 80-year-old man cannot carry it out. That is true. Because the only way to carry it out is not mentioned. The only way to carry it out is silence. Out of silence all the flowers blossom. It is difficult even for an 80-year-old man not to commit any evil and practice all the virtues, because they are byproducts and you cannot do anything which is a byproduct. You have to go to the roots. For example, if I say to you, I remember a small incident in Mao Zedong's life. He was very young. His father died. And his mother was very much interested in growing roses of all colors and all varieties. She has such an aesthetic sense, and she had made such a beautiful garden around her house. But his sister was very sick, and she was very much concerned about her roses. Mao was very young, not more than 12 years old. He said, "Don't be worried, mother. You can go. It is only a question of few days. You can be with your sister. As far as your garden is concerned, I will take care." The mother went, and Mao took as much care as you can conceive. The whole day from morning till evening, he was looking after the roses. But it was strange, they were dying. Trees were dying, flowers were dying, and he could not think what he will answer when the mother will be back. Her whole garden looks deserted, and he is doing so much hard work. His mother came, she looked around the garden and laughed, because Mao was standing there with tears in his eyes. And he said, "I worked continuously from morning till evening." The mother said, "I knew this was going to happen. So don't be worried. Just I came silently and stood on the gate and watched what you are doing. What he was doing, he was washing each flower with water, taking away the dust with a small brush. Naturally, all the flowers, although he has taken great care, but to take care of the flowers, you have to take care of the roots. You don't have to bother about the roses, they will take care themselves. You simply take care of the roots. He never bothered about the roots. He had no idea of the roots. He never watered the roots. He simply washed the flowers. The trees died, the flowers died, and the poor boy was in utter misery. The mother said, I have seen standing outside. I just wanted to see what is going on. And I could see that you have disturbed the whole garden, but there is no need to cry and weep. His mother said to him, this is what human beings are doing all over the world. Everybody is taking care of the flowers and nobody is concerned about the roots. And the real thing is the roots. Flowers come automatically. You don't have to take any special care for them. So without meditation, even an 80-year-old man cannot carry it out. Although it is so simple that a 3-year-old child can say it. The master said, though a 3-year-old child can say it, an 80-year-old man cannot carry it out. Po then bowed down and departed. This is an incomplete statement. He must have heard from someone second hand, third hand. Because the old master, Tao Lin, could not have left out mentioning about the roots. Unless meditation is mentioned, you don't know anything about the teachings of Gautama Buddha. And he must have mentioned it. If he had not mentioned, then Po would not have bowed down and departed. Po was absolutely satisfied. But in this conversation, there is no reason to be satisfied. My way of seeing things is very straightforward. I don't see in this conversation why Po should be satisfied. But he must have been satisfied because he, with great honor, bowed down and departed. Certainly something is missing. Something essential is missing. And it always happens when a man who does not understand, who has not experienced meditation himself, will talk about everything which are byproducts and will forget about meditation. This has happened so many times in so many traditions that it can be accepted as a rule. For example, Mahavira, is thought by his disciples, by his followers, for 25 centuries that he was teaching non-violence, that he was teaching non-possessiveness, that he was teaching being authentic and truthful. But these are all byproducts. And Jaina monks have been following them. And I have seen their faces. They don't show any sign of joy, of fulfillment, of contentment, of reaching to any great silence or peace or bliss. They look absolutely dry, dead, although they are following the discipline as accurately as possible. Just they are missing the foundation. All these three things, non-violence, non-possessiveness, authenticity, truthfulness, arise without any effort on your part. If you succeed in meditation, a man of meditation cannot lie. A man of meditation cannot hurt anybody, hence he is non-violent. A man of meditation knows perfectly well that all things are ephemeral. You had come in the world without anything, and you will have to go from the world without anything. So you can use the things, but you cannot possess them. You can use things just the way you use the railway train. Just because you are sitting in the railway train, you don't start declaring you are the owner of the train. You are using it for a time being. On one station you get in, on another station you get out. Life should be taken just the same way. Whatever life gives to you, use it, but don't become the owner. Don't cling to it. So when it goes out of your hands, you are not sad, you are not frustrated. You don't start thinking of committing suicide because you have gone bankrupt, or just because your wife has escaped with somebody else. I have heard about a man who went to the post office and started telling the postmaster that, please write, my wife has escaped. The postmaster said, I am sorry that your wife has escaped. Perhaps you are in such a disturbed state, you don't see that this is a post office. The police office is just in front. You go there. He said, I am not going there, and I am not telling you to take the report without knowing that it is a post office. The postmaster said, this is strange. You know this is post office, and still you are telling me to report that your wife has escaped with somebody? He said, yes, 7 days before. And I am not going to the police station, because last time she had escaped, I had reported to the police station, and those idiots brought her back. This time I remained silent for 7 days. Let them go as far as possible. But then my conscience started pricking, and I said, this is not right. At least I should report. So I thought that it is better to report to the post office. You just take the report and free me from my pricking conscience. The postmaster said, it's strange. If such is the problem, then why bother? It is good that she has escaped. He said, I am not bothering about her, I am bothering about the man with whom she has escaped. What will be happening to that poor fellow? I am accustomed. He is new. She will kill him. 7 days has passed, nothing has been heard. Don't you feel any problem in it? He asked the postman. I am not bothered about my wife, I am bothered about the man whom she has got hold. And I cannot report to the police office. You can understand my problem. But I am praying every day in the temple, have mercy on the poor man. Save his life. People are living in such misery. But even if the wife they have been miserable with, or the husband with whom the wife has been miserable, they will not separate. They will not allow freedom to each other. Why go on suffering? There is no reason at all. This life is to rejoice. If you can rejoice together, good. If you can rejoice separately, even better. All that is needed is a certain deepening of your consciousness, and that happens through meditation. Then all your actions your behavior, your life, it starts changing on its own accord. You start seeing things clearly. Right now you see things through such a smoke that nothing seems to be clear. A woman went to the doctor and said, "What kind of prescription you have given to my husband?" Because he was so good, so obedient, and suddenly, since you have given him the prescription, he has escaped. The doctor said, "I have not given him any medicine. I have simply prescribed a number for his glasses." So naturally, he must have escaped. "I can see you. That's enough." Because he had wrong numbers, so he was not able to see you. The moment he saw you clearly, he escaped. There is no problem in it. All that you need is clear eyesight into your life, into your actions, into your relations, into everything that surrounds you. Just a clear insight, and that will change everything without any arduous effort on your part.